Okay, let's start. So I'm presenting some work which I currently was still working on because people use it. I'm explaining how to run Debian on inexpensive hardware. So for example, this thing, which looks like a nice lunchbox, and I wish it was because I haven't had lunch, is actually a full computer. And you can run Debian on it. And that's another one, which is just the case, so it doesn't have anything in it, but still, it shows just how small those things really are. Basically, so the talk is about network storage devices, which is the new term, which is quite popular at the moment because everyone wants to store their data, all those illegal movies they've downloaded or whatever. They want to store them somewhere. So what is really popular at the moment are those external hard drives which have a little bit of logic in it. And I will basically start with presenting some hardware which is available out there, because I know that that's what you're really interested in. And then when you're excited, I will tell you that yes, you can usually run your favorite operating system on it. And then in the end, I will give some pointers and we'll probably have plenty of time for questions as well. So like I said, for most people, those devices are basically a external hard drive which has some logic in it and which, you know, does something new. But for most people, you just plug it into the network and you don't need to install anything, it simply works, and then you can upload whatever you want to. But for geeks, I mean, those things are actually, you know, that's a complete computer. It doesn't have just a hard drive in it, but there is a CPU, there is memory, there is basically everything you need. Usually there isn't terribly much of it, but still, it is a complete machine. So the advantages of these machines are that they are very power efficient, which make it quite ideal for a small little server at home because you don't have to pay so much power. They are pretty quiet, again, which is good if you want to have a small server at home. And usually they're quite cheap. Again, we will see some prices, we will see some hardware. Some of it is quite expensive. So this one, which I quite like because the hardware is nice and because the company producing it is actually really supporting the Debian effort. But unfortunately, it's quite expensive. So some of the hardware. So the most popular one is this device. The reason is it's so cheap. You can get it for like 70, 80 euro or even less. So the price I have here is from Amazon DE, but you can definitely get it less if you look. And I mean, one thing I should say, I'm not gonna tell people what they can do with those machines. Basically, you have to be creative, and I know people do loads of stuff with them, from like having small servers to like using that as like a small weather station where, because you can connect some sensors and stuff like that. So people out there are really using those machines. The funny thing with me is, even though I develop the software so you can run Debian on it, I don't actually use any of this myself, so I can't tell you what to do with it. Quite frankly, I think this doesn't have much memory and is really slow. It's really painful to test the installation because it takes quite a while, but people are really happy with this machine. And the other reason why I don't like it is because it's a pain for developers. But again, for most users, they don't see that. For them, it's just a really small, quiet, I mean, it doesn't have a fan machine. So it has a ARM CPU in it. The old machines came with 133 megahertz, But if you take away a piece of hardware, then it suddenly runs twice as fast. And the new models which are now being sold actually don't have that piece of hardware. So they actually underclock the machine, which is quite interesting. So you can run it up to 266 megahertz, which is the normal frequency for that CPU. It has 32 memory, which is not low, but you know, for a small server, it's enough. It has 8 megabytes of flash, which is good because we can put a Debian kernel and a init runner that's in it, so you can simply boot from flash and then it boots from the USB hard drive. Obviously, it doesn't have an internal hard drive. It has two USB connectors, so you can connect one hard drive and something else, or two hard drives. And it has one Ethernet port. The other device, which I really kind of like, is the Ficus N2100. It's much faster, has a 600 megahertz CPU in it. It has, and that's something which is really unique, because most of those devices have the memory soldered onto the board, but this one actually has normal DDR slot in it, so you can put memory in it, and at the moment it supports up to 512 megabytes. In theory, the hardware needs can do up to a gigabyte, but the bootloader needs modification for that, and one of the kernel hackers is working on that, but I don't know what the progress is. He is here, but doesn't seem to be in the room. So it has 60 megabyte of flash. You can put two SATA drives in it. It has 2 gigabyte, so 2 1-gigabyte Ethernet connections, and it has 2 USB at the back and 1 in the front, and it has a mini PCI slot in it, even though that was not designed very in a smart way, because it's really hard to fit it in if it's like the normal size. But the big major downside of this is that it's really expensive. It's like 300 or 350 euro. In the States, you can get it for about $270, which means it's like 10 euro, I don't know. Like 200 euro maybe, 220. But I'm trying to convince the company, which is very supportive, to have some kind of Debian developers program, but we need to, I haven't approached them about this yet. And in my talk, I will primarily concentrate about those two machines, because that's where I've done the work, and where basically you take them in the installer and it just works. Whereas the other machines are either work in progress, or machines which would be interesting, and maybe some of you can do the work, but they don't work yet. Much of this work is done in collaboration with the Slug Linux project, which has basically provided an alternative firmware for this machine. And they are working on some other machine, but which runs in flash, whereas the thing I did is you have a full Debian system, but you need a hard drive. So that again depends on what you want. If you want to have just this box which runs from flash, then you can go to the Slug Linux project and download their alternative firmware. But if you want to run a real Debian system from disk, then you can choose what I did. And they are currently working on a number of other hardware as well. One of them is this. Again, it's quite similar. Many of them have that Intel IXP chip in it, 64 megabyte memory. I mean, it's a little bit faster and bigger than this one, but it's basically all the same. Again, this one is something where the company just donated some machines to those Slug Linux people, and they're currently working on that. One problem here is that it only has 4 megabyte of flash, which currently we don't support, but I will talk about that later. Something which people might have heard about is the Kuro box. They have developed, but basically the Kuro box is their open system for development. And if you go to a store, it's known as the Buffalo Link Station, but it's basically the same hardware, just that the Kuro box is their open development thing where you get the source code and all kind of stuff. So it has a PowerPC chip in it, unlike most of the other devices which are ARM-based. It has 228 megabyte RAM, 4 megabyte flash. I know that if you go to the wiki, they tell you how you can install Debian manually, but you can't just take Debian installer and it will work, which you can do with those machines. So like I said, someone needs to do the work. And there are like loads of machines coming out. It's really popular. Like I said, I will concentrate on those two machines. So some of the advantages and disadvantages. Like I said, this machine is really popular, I believe, because it's cheap and it's good enough for most people. It's definitely cheap, it's definitely very quiet. And one of the really nice things in terms of both development and users is that you can upgrade the firmware via the network, which is quite good, because if you make some mistake and the machine doesn't work anymore, for most cases you have to connect a serial console. I mean, none of these machines come with any kind of input output devices like VGA. You can't connect the monitor and see, you know, why doesn't this machine boot anymore. You basically need to open it up, and then you need to connect a serial console, which many people can't do. So the good thing here is that you can upgrade the firmware via the network. So if something doesn't work, you can simply ask me for an image which I know works, and at the moment I have one on my website. You can download that, you can boot it, and then we can see why the original system didn't boot. Most machines don't have this. So if you run into problems, you basically need to attach a serial console, which can be quite hard in some cases. The disadvantage of this machine, and in fact the whole Intel IXP chips, which many devices use, is that they require proprietary microcode in order for the Ethernet to work. Which means that if you take the Debian installer image from debian.org, you need a USB Ethernet, because built-in in Ethernet will not work. So there is a website called slugfirmware.net where I provide the official Debian installer plus this microcode, and the installation copies the microcode into the system, so then it will just be there and you don't need it. But it's a problem because you have to go somewhere else and we can't really support it. There were some efforts to talk to Intel to get this changed, but I'm not sure whether they're going anywhere. And then a problem with this device, it is quite slow and it doesn't have much memory. Might be a problem or maybe not, depending on what you want to do. So this device, it's quite fast, has a 600 megahertz CPU in it. One of the nice things is that the memory can be upgraded, like I said before. So you can see that here. So it has mini PCIe. One of the problems, and the other really nice thing, is that the company, which is based in Taiwan, they really care about this effort to make Debian available. So if I have any questions, like, they actually reply to email. And the other thing they did is they made some modifications to their bootloader to make it easier for Debian to work. And one thing which they have recently done, and there will be a firmware release soon, is to allow to telnet to the bootloader when the machine starts, and then you can fix stuff from there. So if you have a problem, then it will be possible without connecting a serial console to fix the machine. And this is coming out really soon now. They have made the modification, and hopefully they will release the firmware before Debian releases. Well, I think it's probably going to happen. And that's good because then I can tell people to upgrade to this firmware and then to install Debian to have a rescue option. The problem with this machine is the ventilation is not great. So what happens is that we have the fan here, and then you have the SATA backplane, and then you have the hard drives, which means that the fan is basically blowing onto the SATA backplane, but not onto the hard drive, which is not ideal. The other problem is that the fan is probably quite cheap, it's quite noisy, but it can be replaced, it's a standard chip. And like I said before, it's quite expensive. Okay, so now we are done with the hardware, and now we're looking at the software. So what do you need if you want to port Debian to these machines, or how is it being done? So basically, as a developer, you definitely need serial console access, because you need to see what's going on. You simply need that, because the thing you develop is not going to work immediately. So you need to say, is the kernel booting, is the installer starting probably properly. Ideally, you would also have JTAG, which means that if you override the bootloader and nothing boots anymore, you could still fix that, which some devices have, some don't. Fortunately, I've never needed this yet, and hopefully I never will. The other thing is, with those devices, many of which are produced in Asia, many of you probably know about the site called gplviolations.org. The problem is, many of those manufacturers simply don't understand free software, open source, and Linux. They basically take some random Linux kernel and then make some really ugly modifications to just get it working on their hardware, and then they ship it, maybe with source code, maybe without. And that's where the community comes in, where basically community people then have to fix it up and get it into the mainline kernel. So that was one of the nice things with this box, was that the Slug Linux community had done all of that work already when I started looking at into porting Debian. So there was a kernel which worked. But that was because the community did it. Hopefully, at some point, those manufacturers are going to understand how the open source community works and will actually contribute their code into mainline, get it reviewed, and get it, you know, high quality, which at the moment isn't the case. What you usually find is a driver which is written so it runs both on Linux and Windows. And you can imagine how beautiful that is if you stick it into the kernel. And for me, I want to run Debian on it. I don't want to, you know, work on the kernel. I just want a kernel that works, and then I can run Debian. So what I really need is mainline support. And there are some devices which, like the hardware, is so great, but I'm not going to touch them because I know they will never be supported in mainline. Recently some hardware was released, and it has a chip in it from Marvell, again an ARM-based chip, and we asked them for documentation. I had a volunteer who would have done all the work integrating it into the Linux kernel, but they wouldn't give us documentation. So in the end, I know that this is never going to happen. I'm sure they're going to sell loads of those machines and loads of those chips. But with their own hacked firmware and kernel, and it's not going to be mainline. It is a shame.
Yeah. Isn't that the same chip from Open?
No, that's a wireless chip, and but it is an ARM compatible chip, but it's a different different line, unfortunately. Yeah. Although what I might try, because we tried talking to Marvell, and the people we talked to were really useless. What I could do is to try to see what the OLPC people have a good contact at Marvell, and maybe they can get logs. But at the moment it looks very bad. But again, it needs someone to actually write letters to those companies and do something, maybe. another question? Yeah.
What is the benefit for Marvel to not release the documentation they already have? It doesn't make sense.
Well, don't ask me. I mean, there is source code. They have to provide source code, but basically, unless, I mean, there are always hardware defects, and unless you have proper documentation, we can't support it properly, because we never know. Some people did that before with some Intel chips, and basically it ended up being a horror to maintain, because we don't know what's wrong, because there was no documentation. But anyway, there are some really interesting machines which are supported, so instead of, you know, wasting my time with companies which are not interested in working with us, I would just focus on you know, that hardware which is supported. And I think this example is such a great example where you can actually go to companies and say, you know, because this machine, I'm sure it wouldn't be sold anymore if it were for the whole Slack community, because it's really a huge community who are using this. And I'm sure that otherwise they wouldn't produce this machine anymore. So then we have an example where we can say, well, if you get proper community support, your product line is going to last for much longer than it normally would. So I have one example, a different hardware, which is quite comparable to this chip, or to this machine, but it's much nicer, it's much cheaper, it can do more. It was a wireless router for Netgear. It had 5 Ethernet, it had wireless, and it had 1 USB. So, and it had the same memory, same flash, different chip. It was a MIPS chip, but again, about the same speed, 200 megahertz. But the problem is, there was no kernel support. There was no community, and here we have like thousands of people using it, lots of people developing. There's a big mindshare. So it's a really good example that yes, working with the community can make a big difference, and in terms of money as well. So anyway, like I said before, those devices don't have any output. Like, without a screen, how do you install Debian on it? Because we want to make it easy. I don't want people to tell, well, you first have to hack into the firmware, and then you have to download that tarball, and then you have to do this, and then you manually have to change the kernel. I just want people to take Debian installer and do nothing else. That's ideally what I want, and it's possible. The way it can be done is that you ship a firmware update for those machines. So you basically have to look at how do they ship their firmware, what kind of format do they use, and unfortunately all of them use something different. And you have to simply look at it, reverse engineer it a little bit. But in the end, you can create a firmware update, or at least something which for them, for the machine, looks like, oh, I'm getting a new version of the firmware. Whereas in reality, we are writing Debian installer to flash, which means you're upgrading to the new version, and when you reboot, Debian installer is started. So the next problem where now Debian installer runs, but I can't see anything because there is no monitor. The way we've solved that is to do the installation via SSH. So basically, when Debian installer starts, it will automatically bring up SSH, and then you can log in to the machine as installer at whatever address it had with the password install, and then you get the nice blue screen of Debian installer, and you can simply follow the whole installation, and in the end, the Debian kernel will be written to flash, and a initramfs which will boot from the hard drive or from USB hard drive, and that's it. And the other question you might have, well, so it starts SSH, but well, how do I know where to connect? So the nice thing is, because all of the values which we need, all of the configuration data is on the machine itself. We can simply write a little script which reads that information and uses it during the installation. So if this machine is set to do DHCP, then okay, Debian installer will start, we'll get an address with DHCP, and we'll then start SSH. Or if you set it to a static address, it will simply read this address from flash and enable SSH on this particular IP address. So you know exactly where you have to SSH to. So there are basically two tools which had to be written to make that possible. The first one is called old system precede. So precede is, and we will hear a talk right after me about automatic installations. You can tell the installer certain values and then it will not ask you for those questions because it has the values already, and that's called preceding. So what old system preceding does, it simply reads the values from the old system and precedes Debian installer with it. And that means that we can precede, we don't precede the whole installation, so everything is automatic. We simply precede everything you need in order to get the network running so we can start SSH server. And then you can do the rest manually. So again, all of those machines are different. Some of them have a Unix file system on it, so you can read like etc hosts or host name, resolve.conf and all those things. Others store their values directly into flash in a different way. But again, by looking at the firmware, the existing old firmware, you can usually see how it's being done, and then you just write some code to do the same. And it's usually pretty simple. The other thing is, at the end of the installation, we need to write a new kernel and an initramfs to flash. So the initramfs has enough tools in it to basically start Debian from disk. It has a kernel, it has the modules, like in case of here where you have a USB hard drive, well, obviously you need to include the USB modules. And then it basically just starts Debian from disk. At the moment, it supports those two devices. Like I said, some more devices are being worked on, and it's really trivial to extend for other devices. The other thing you need, those machines were not designed to run Debian. Those machines were designed to run the crappy hard firmware which the vendors provide. So sometimes you have to work around them a little bit. So for example, on this machine, the bootloader tells the Linux kernel a specific command line, and one of the things is it tells it root equals def rem 0, which means the root file system is in flash, which might be true for the original firmware, but in our case, we have the root file system on disk. So if we would simply boot the Debian kernel and then it would see that root RAM, whatever, and it would get confused and it wouldn't start Debian. So we need a couple of initramfs hooks which override a number of values. So we have an initramfs hook which basically gets run when you create the initramfs, which then can hard code the real root device into the initramfs, and that will be started. So sometimes you have to work around those devices a little bit. Like, the support isn't ideal from like the developer's point of view, simply because we didn't design the whole system. We have to live with some of the things they did. But at least we can make it as easy for people as possible. So there will be plenty of time for questions because I'm actually coming to an end now. So what's the future? So there are a number of things we don't support at the moment. For example, I mentioned before that some of those devices have 4 megabytes of flash. At the moment, we couldn't support them because we need at least 8 megabytes of flash. The reason for that is really silly. It's because at the moment, the init RAMFS contains BusyBox and glibc, so it's kind of big. There is some work in progress to move to KVC, which is much smaller. So if you look into dev boot on your system, and if you look at the initramfs file, you will see that it's actually quite big. It's like 4 megabytes, and it's much too big for what it actually does, because it doesn't do very much. It just needs to start from disk. But that's because it contains glibc and BusyBox, and the maintainer of initramfs tools is trying to get rid of those requirements, but that's something which will happen after Edge. So once this is done, and the initramfs is maybe 300 kilobytes instead of 3 megabytes, we can actually support smaller devices as well. The other thing which some people are interested in, which I'm personally not so interested in, but some people have asked for this, and hopefully someone will do it, is to have the idea of having a fallback option. So for example, here, well, what happens if I don't connect the hard drive? Well, basically, nothing's gonna happen because it expects to boot Debian from hard drive. But some people say, well, but it would be nice to have a fallback option that if it sees there is no disk, it would simply start a small system or a rescue system from flash, which I agree, yes, it's nice. In this particular case, I don't see the need because you can simply upgrade via the network. So you could have 2 different files on your laptop and then simply upgrade whatever you want. But I agree, it would be nice. There are also some ideas of having Debian installer in Flash, because that would allow reinstalls and it also allows a rescue mode. And with many machines which have like 16 megabytes of Flash, it would definitely be possible because the kernel only needs about 2 megabytes or 1.5. Initramfs at the moment needs 4, but you can get it down to much less than 1 megabyte with those changes I just described. And then there will be plenty of space for other stuff. But that's something someone needs to do. So maybe there's a volunteer who's interested in working on that. The other thing I should say, that even though, as I described, you basically make that firmware upgrade, you reboot, and you SSH into Debian installer and everything will work, the only problem is right now, Debian installer RC1 is broken, so you need to wait for RC2. The problem is there was a change with the keys, the GBG keys, and even though a full CD still works, all of these devices are installed via network. So what you flash Debian installer is really just the basic system of Debian installer, which basically downloads more components from the network, and because it relies on those components and there has been a change, it currently doesn't work. Franz Pop, who will give the talk after me, is currently working on the preparation for RC2, so hopefully we'll get that in 2 weeks. Well, I'm sure he's going to correct me.
Yes, I'll talk after G2's talk.
Ah, okay. So, not right after me, but he's speaking. So if people are interested in running Debian on these devices, I've documented that on my website. It's really foolproof. It's really not hard. And like I said, there is the Slug Linux project, which has done lots of work as well. And if you don't want to run the full Debian system, but just something on the firmware, then they might be a better option. And also, if you're interested in other devices, They have a list of similar devices which they are working on. So now, some people might have some questions.
What about the firmware? Is the firmware stored in the flash, or is this a separate memory?
Well, so what's the firmware? That's a big problem. Just from a, like, what does the word mean? And I think I use firmware for different things as well, because there isn't really a good definition. So there are basically two things which are important. One thing is the bootloader, which you shouldn't touch, because if you touch it, your system is not going to boot anymore. And then there is what I call the firmware, which is like their software in flash. And that's basically what we are replacing. But the bootloader stays untouched. So what usually, if you look at the flash layout, you basically have like the bootloader, the Linux kernel, and then some kind of RAM disk or init RAMFS. And don't touch the bootloader, but the rest we basically replace with a Debian kernel and with a Debian init RAMFS.
So how big is the bootloader?
I mean, it depends. So this one uses, both of them use Red Boot. I think it uses 256 kilobytes. It's not very big. And so what I said before, that the company here is providing a firmware update. I don't care about, you know, that software. What I care about is the bootloader,
yeah.
And they are providing a upgrade which changes the bootloader to be more sensible, have that rescue option. So when the machine starts, you can telnet to a specific port, and then you get into the bootloader, and then you can manually load something over the network, which is really very nice. Yeah.
Reasonable performance out of the network, as in more than
half a
megabyte. Do you know? It's gigabit Ethernet, it supports, but I don't think it does scale higher than 100 megabits.
Okay. Well, so like I said before, I'm really bad asking about like anything about performance or usability, because simply I don't care. I don't use those machines. I only do development. So what I notice is how I can tell you, you know, how long does Debian installer run need on it, and I can tell you here it's much faster than here. So I prefer this box for development, obviously. But I don't know. There has been the other nice thing I should say about this box is that there is starting to be a community. So a number of kernel developers, ARM kernel developers, have this box, which means it's actually going to be supported. It's remaining to be supported.
I just looked at it and see it's got 2 gigabit ports in my immediate port.
I can't tell you, but there are a number of other people, and some of them have done some performance stats. What someone also did is look at how much power it actually uses. One of the conclusions was that the power supply provided isn't very efficient. If you send me an email, I can send you the link to the web page or the email address of this guy. I quite frankly, I can't tell you how fast it is. I can tell you we had lots of problems getting Ethernet to work because their firmware ships with the driver provided by the hardware company, whereas the Linux kernel uses a different one, and it didn't work. But we finally got that working upstream. We have a nice solution now. But unfortunately, it doesn't answer your question. Yeah.
Which other devices will be supported in the future?
So I showed some in the beginning. But basically, the answer is whatever you're going to work on.
Video isn't a problem.
So,
thanks.
Rod Bigby, who is the lead of that Slug Linux project, he's currently working on this device. So I have some patches ready for Debian installer from him, and he's currently experimenting with this device. But like I said before, this one is going to be a little harder to support because it only has 4 megabytes of flash. I don't know of anyone else who's currently working on other devices. And I don't have anything which is particularly interesting. I heard that the Kurobox people are working on a new release because that's the Kurobox 2.
So the next sheet.
Yeah. So this box, the Kurobox, that's currently version 2, and they're planning a major upgrade to version 3. And maybe if it's interesting hardware, I might look at it. But I don't have any specific plans. So at the moment, it's really those two devices which are well supported. So in Edge, both of them just work. And some devices are work in progress, but not very much, very concrete.
Yeah. What about those wireless routers with attached USB drives?
Yeah, so I mentioned before that there is this wireless router which I have at home, and it's beautiful, but kernel support is simply missing. Many of them are based on MIPS, on a MIPS chip from Broadcom, and there simply isn't mainline kernel support. I've been hassling Broadcom. We have very good contacts with Broadcom. Our MIPS build machines all run on Broadcom hardware, but they have two different lines of MIPS CPUs. One of them is the really high-end stuff, which we're using in Debian, which is very supported, and the other one is the like wireless CPU, which is like low power and low cost, and this one currently isn't supported. They said they were going to look into it, but that was in summer, and I haven't seen anything. So I know that OpenWRT runs on them fairly well, but I don't think Debian is going to run on them in the near future. But if there's kernel support, I have the hardware, I'm going to look into it, but not before that, because it's horrible, it's a pain. I mean, I'm not a kernel person. If someone does the kernel support and gets it into mainline, I am happy to do the Debian stuff. And there is one Debian developer who is not here today, but it's on his to-do list, but he's very busy. So again, I wouldn't count on it. There are the open WRT people who are trying to push stuff upstream, but I mean, they need to develop open WRT as well. So I don't think it's gonna happen very soon.
Is there any manufacturer who is putting a label on these boxes, such as a community proof of yours? I think, as we here we are, we don't realize how much market power we have.
Mm.
And when there would be a manufacturer wake up and put on his boxes, okay, we have main kernel support, you can get documentation from us, and he would make money from it, and we all would benefit from us, and we get the most from our market power, we get the best value from market value. It would be a win-win situation.
Yeah, I agree that there needs to be more cooperation. In fact, with the Linksys, it was quite funny because they had a product based on Linux, and OpenWRT was a really good replacement for their firmware. And at some point they realized, oh, if we switch from Linux to some other operating system, I can't remember which one, it's not Windows, we can move from like this 8 or 4 megabytes flash to only 2 megabytes of flash, and oh, we're gonna save, I don't know, $0.50, but because we're sending millions of them, it's gonna save us, you know, loads of money. And when they did it, suddenly they saw that their sales really went down. And then they released a version with L for Linux at the end. And apparently the OpenWRT people, who have fairly good contacts with some of those wireless vendors, they say that it is really a noticeable difference. but I don't have the data, and I don't have many contacts. But maybe I should try to talk to the OpenWRT people again. It's something which is definitely needed.
Did you see some hard evidence for this? But
I didn't see the data, but they...
I think there are a few myths about this something.
I haven't seen evidence, but I've heard it from a quite reputable source who has a very good contact at Linksys. So I believe that it's true. And I mean, the fact is that they did release the Linux product. And I don't think they did it if they didn't have a very good reason.
Well,
so I believe that it's true.
My guess was they did that because the Linux developers inside Linksys had some sort of
I don't know. It's very hard to tell because they don't publish any data. It's just something I've heard and which I believe to be very plausible. But I mean, it would be nice to have this data. And in fact, I was going to show some data. Which is this in Debian. I mean, if you look at the last 2 years, then there were certain discussions about which kind of platforms Debian should support. And ARM was one of them which wasn't, I mean, lots of developers in Debian who were supposed to work on the ARM port didn't do very much. And there was some kind of wake-up call and more people got involved. But what you see here, so that's popularity contest, and among other information it shows what kind of architectures people are running, at least those who have installed popularity contest on a machine and are reporting results. And I mean, obviously the Intel stuff is pretty high, but what you can see here, the blue thing is ARM, and you can see it from going here to here. ARM is now the third most used, or at least reported, architecture in Debian. And I believe it's because of this machine, because it's not just what I believe, because popularity contest also reports what kind of packages you're using. And if you use this machine, you have a Slug Tools package automatically installed by Debian installer. And this package, you can see in the figures as well, has gone up like considerably. So there we have some data that, I mean, yes, it's really changing things. It really makes a big difference.
So how many users?
About 600 to 700.
Well, that's 6,000. That's 600, whatever. But
yeah, one additional thing, the Circus boards usually work out of the box with Debian. They are Intel based. You can use compact flash cards for installation here.
Yeah.
So you could easily use, they have USB connections and up to 8 network connections as well.
Yeah. I've also had a product called Linotop being released, which is like a small Intel-based system which has Debian on it. Those kind of things are really getting popular, and I think we will see more of them in the future.
Are there any hardware incompatibilities, like, I don't know, some power savings, frequency scaling stuff that doesn't work? Or
So with the Slug, it's basically all supported now. With some previous releases, we didn't support the LEDs and a couple of things, but now it's all supported. With this machine, we are supporting the pen. We are not supporting the LEDs. We're not supporting the beeper. But the rest is basically all supported. It doesn't do frequency scaling.
I have to take the three-way with me. I'm leaving for another talk.
That's fine.
Thank you for the fish.
You can use the USB stick, but I don't recommend it because it has 32 megabytes memory, so it's definitely going to help. I wouldn't do that. Yes, you should do that.
I also needed some help on trying to push that on single. Thank you.